We have to get to the playoff baseball, BT. There was a lot of it from the weekend. Oof. Let's begin with Saturday night in the Bronx. In a game where I know the Yankees won, but to me, I think that was more discouraging than anything else. You expect them to beat the Royals. I expect them to sweep the Royals. I did not expect Cole to get beat the way that he did. Judge to go 0-for-4 right out of the gate with three strikeouts, leaving guys on. Sloppiness on the base paths defensively. I was discouraged even in the win for the Yankees in game one.
There was definitely things in the win that concerned me. Never to apologize for an October win. There was definitely some good stuff. Austin Wells was good. Verdugo. Remember, I wanted to play him. I was going to say, I'm going to run him out there. I trust him.
I was shocked at how many Yankee fans didn't like that decision.
Yeah, well, there's just this intrigue with Dominguez, and Verdugo has no equity here, whatever, but Verdugo's a baller, so that move paid off. The bullpen was great. Holmes was solid. Canley was good. Luke Weaver was fantastic. I thought Cabrera played a pretty smart first base, showed some good hands, and Soto was amazing, but the problem with the win is that the bad was alarmingly bad. Cole was bad. Even the outs were hit on the screws, and I could even get into Stanton and Volpe, which we could later. But Aaron Judge, and we love Judge, and he is an amazing player. Game one, spotlight already intensified. Three whiffs is a horrible way to try to end these October failures for him.
Think about the start to that game. And forget even postseasons past. Let's just look at this Yankee team and the inconsistencies and frustrations throughout the regular season. You saw it in the first inning. Cole getting hit hard, and you're thinking, oh boy, I don't know what kind of, are we getting good Garrett Cole, are we getting bad Garrett Cole? And then the Yankees, right out of the gate, Gleyber gets on, Soto doubles, places on fire.
Yes.
Second and third against Michael Wacha. And the Yankees don't score a run.
I know.
That can't happen.
I think their situational hitting was an issue, and that's something that we've talked a lot about this Yankee team over the last bunch of Octobers here. You know, the other thing, too, is, I mentioned Stanton and Volpe. I mean, Volpe might not make an error like that for another 5 years where he fires it down basically into right field. And, you know, you don't want to see it. I'm not going to give him a full pass. It's an ugly play. But that's not really Volpe, so I'm going to push him aside for a moment. Giancarlo Stanton, not once, twice, base running an issue again, where he failed to beat out the play at first base on the diving stop at third, where, I mean, he can't even run.
Can't run,
and
dude.
Then he didn't score on the base hit. Now, all right, it didn't hurt you the first game, Sal. I'm already at the point now, I don't want Dominguez in the outfield. I'm not prepared to run the experiment of if that lackluster play for 2 weeks when he was playing the outfield at the end of the season, if that's an anomaly or if that's maybe him just being messier than we thought. I'm not messing with that in terms of defense right now, but I might already, against righties, your DH and Stanton sit.
I actually love that idea.
I'm already there.
Yeah, you can't have all the fears that you may have had going into this postseason with the Yankees. Almost all of them reared their head at least a little bit in game one. Now, yeah, they won. And I was doing the show yesterday solo, and some Yankee fans were happy with it. Yeah, but they won, Sal, you're so hard. No, but it's not about beating the Royals. That should be a given. All due respect, look at the Royals lineup.
I mean, come on. And by the way, it's weak.
And you didn't even face their best pitcher yet, whether it's Reagans, whether it is Seth Lugo.
I know.
And the Royals themselves running into outs. How could you send Salvador Perez? What are we doing here?
I mean, that was a great throw by Soto, but I have no idea how you send him.
I mean, come on. It's idiotic. So the Royals themselves, and the fact that it came down to the last inning, and the Yankees benefited twice from calls, at very least, whether it's Jazz, with the stolen base, Bobby Witt Jr. that last at bat. I thought Luke Weaver got the benefit of some calls with the home plate umpire. But anyway, to barely beat the Royals in game one of the postseason, it just was not encouraging. If they play like that, they might not even get to the World Series, let alone win a World Series. They won't win a World Series, but if they continue to play like that, maybe the Guardians or Tigers beat the Yankees. You got to clean it up.
If I asked you, Sal, go back a month ago, and I said, we had this conversation on the air, but I said, Sal, what's the biggest issue right now at that point with the Yankees? Your answer very well may have been the bullpen, right?
Right.
Holmes was a mess. We didn't know what they were doing. So while the sloppiness was evident and disconcerting, I think one of their biggest issues, one of their top two issues all year, I think it's kind of resolved itself.
But again, think about it. The Yankees needed to get, five outs from Clay Holmes?
Yeah, he went 1 2/3. Yeah,
okay, you think you could get five big outs from Clay Holmes moving forward? Like, I wouldn't trust that that's going to happen. And they barely still won the game. So Weaver, yes, I trust at the back end. Although he's still got to prove himself along the way here.
Sure.
Every closer slips up. We'll get to Diaz in a second. But I understand. They actually have a closer in Weaver. So that is definitely better than anything you thought. But even, going to Hill early in the game.
Like, oh, he just, he, he's
terrible.
Like, yeah, it was a mess. He did nothing there. You know, you mentioned the Jazz play at second base. Like, if I'm a Royals fan, I'm absolutely losing my mind. It was out. I don't know how you get that wrong. The way he slid, and like it was just a kind of a sloppy slide because you can see in the slow-mo, the back of his cleat actually dug into the ground, which actually propelled him up, which forced him to finish a little short of second base. He was clearly out. Even Ron Darling, Ronnie was, listen, I'll take it. There is no doubt that he was out at second base.
The only thing to me that was a vintage Yankees going back to the Dynasty postseason feel was that they were getting every call. And that's not to make it, you know, the Yankees came without getting the calls. But everything else to me was, uh-oh. But the Yankees did get the benefit of the calls, which, you know, that happened in the dynasties. And sometimes you need that. A little luck can go a long way in the postseason. Yeah, they had the benefit of the call. Look, BT, if they lost game one with Rodon tonight against Reagan.
Yeah.
And Seth Lugo looming, you could have made a case they could have lost this series.
They very easily could have lost the game. And again, Sal's not wrong. It was a sloppy game. But to me, the Wells at bats, Verdugo, the pen,
Glaber,
Soto, Glaber going oppo. And, you know, Boone was good. Boone was pretty good. I don't want to just rail on him all the time, but Costa stinks. I don't know what else to say, man. He is, at this point, so, like, unnecessarily dramatic and corny calling these games. I can't take it. I honestly can't take it.
I didn't have a major problem with him from watching that game Saturday. Now, Yankees up 1-0, game two tonight in the Bronx. Rodon on the mound for them, so we'll keep an eye on that and look forward to seeing the Yanks here hopefully take it 2-0 lead on the Royals. I don't know what to expect from Rodon, but I do expect the Yankees to play better and maybe Judge gets going tonight, and that could kind of, you know, springboard him into a successful postseason. As for the Mets, BT, they played a game on Saturday, another dramatic comeback against Zach Wheeler, and the Phillies didn't do it against Zach. Obviously, he's out of the game. They come back late. And then yesterday, a terrific back-and-forth game. And for me, I'm not going to go nuts. Mets did what they had to do, splitting the first two. I think it is going to be lit at Citi Field on Tuesday, tomorrow night, for Game 3. Been a long time since the Mets have had a chance to watch their team in person since that weekend series against the Phillies that we were out there.
It feels
like forever ago.
That's true.
So that'll be nice. Ultimately, happy with the split. But yesterday's a game where Edwin Diaz needs to do his job. He didn't, and they lost because of it.
You got
to
beg that win. There are splits. Now, listen, going into the series, if we said, hey, Sal, you want to take one out of two in Philly, come back to Queens, see what happens, I think most Met fans would sign up for that. But when you spit the bit, and there's no more painful loss than a blown save in October.
Yeah.
There's nothing that stings. Even just sitting there for, like, you know, 2.5 hours and, you know, getting one hit or having no base runners, like, that's different than having your at times great closer blow the game. Now, I had no issue with the way Mendoza deployed him coming in with. I liked it. Matter of fact, I like that he's going with the gut and deviating from.
How can anybody have an issue with that?
No, I don't think anybody does.
No, there were a lot of people saying it.
Really?
Well, social media.
Well, meaning they should. They wouldn't have. What was their main gripe though?
Because you can't go to Diaz there.
Why? He got Schwarber for the seventh.
Yeah.
He got Turner to start the eighth. Now the issue was pitching around. I thought he showed Bryce too much respect.
Yeah.
You know, like
He's too much of a.
You got to go after him.
Correct.
You got to challenge him. So
he was too scared to go after him.
Yeah,
that's pathetic from your closer.
And once that place, you know, in Philadelphia gets that energy, it is loud. Once they start to hit, they are tough. From a Mets perspective, I would be very worried that these bats have awoken after all these October failures by Philly. Mets were amazing in the eighth inning on Saturday between five or six straight at bats with two strikes. I've never seen that in my life. Even Pete with the sack fly, Iglesias, you know, 8-9 foul balls. Amazing. Saturday was awesome. Sunday is a crusher.
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
And here's why. 3-0 lead. Now, if the Mets won that game yesterday, they were going to sweep the Phillies. Like, there's
they
no
very
doubt
well
in my
might
mind.
Have.
Yeah, and it certainly wasn't going to go back to Philadelphia. I don't even know if it's going to go back to Philadelphia as it stands. I think the Mets have easily two wins in them here at Citi Field. Now, again, we'll see what happens, but how can you not believe in this team? Even in the loss yesterday with Vientos hitting the big home run, tying the game. If they had last licks, maybe they would have won that game. They didn't. It was on the road. They will have last licks the next two nights. But here's where I thought the game started to turn. Up 3-0, Severino facing Bryce Harper. He gives up the base hit to Trey Turner.
Yep.
And at that point, it's like, okay. And I'm just telling you now, I wasn't live tweeting, but I'm in real time. This is my thought process. Not get him out, although I'm thinking of all the options in my head. And the number one thing I kept saying was just keep him in the ballpark. That's all you have to do. It's 3-0, a guy on. Just keep Bryce in the ballpark. Of course, Bryce almost predictably hits a two-run homer. Really not, I mean, I don't know what to do there. I honestly, it crossed my mind, did they go to Diaz here? If they had a dominant lefty in the bullpen, maybe they do that.
Yeah.
I knew it wasn't a good matchup, but you just hope against hope that, all right, even if he gets beat, just keep him in the ballpark. He doesn't. Then Castellanos fires the next pitch for a home run, and now you're all tied. But to blow a 3-0 lead and then a 4-3 lead after you punch back again with Nimmo, that's where I have a problem, and I have a major problem with Edwin Diaz. I just don't trust Diaz.
I don't trust him either. I liked keeping Severino in there. I had no issue with that at all. And listen, I watched Mendoza's entire postgame press conference. I thought he laid it out very well. There just was a dearth of options at that point. Peterson had pitched the day before, obviously. Yeah. And the Mets have been on this run going back to the end of the Brewers series where they won that final game regular season. Atlanta, the rain delays, obviously, you know, getting this thing going here. Like, they have been up against the ropes. There's just not many options. So the way he laid it out with Buto, with McGill coming in, and then obviously with Diaz in the high-leverage situation, yeah, which I had no issue with, I do not think Mendoza mismanaged that at all. I really don't.
Well, Diaz got to do his job.
Severino was really good.
Diaz got to do his job. I mean, maybe you could have said, all right, go to Tyler McGill out of the bullpen before, you know, Bryce Harper hit one off of Severino.
Not the way Severino was pitching,
yeah,
though, Sal.
Yeah, I know, but the third time through.
He was pretty filthy, man.
I know,
he was
but you
filthy.
Just, if I'm sitting there saying just keep him in the ballpark, you know that you're screwed with that matchup to begin with. So maybe that, if anything, but certainly no issue with going to Diaz when he went to Diaz. I have a major issue with Diaz not being able to get the
quick
job
question,
done.
Quick question before we get to the calls here. So maybe this maybe we see this tomorrow. Because Peterson now, not once but twice, has shown a pretty good adaptability to the bullpen. Maybe next time Harper's up there, you bring in Peterson.
Lefty-lefty. Now, the thing is, Harper and I believe Schwarber have both been fine against lefties. Like, I think the splits are what
I hear.
Harper's just a beast, and you can't let him beat you. But if you're, like, with Severino's one thing, with Edwin Diaz, you got to go after him.
Yeah, he nibbled, he was soft. He wanted no part of that matchup
this
week.
Remember, this week, or last week, I should say, a week ago today, started the most incredible week in Mets history with these comebacks. Again, even in the loss yesterday, it started because Edwin Diaz didn't do his job in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't have been Diaz having to come back out for the second inning in Atlanta. They gave you the 6-3 lead. Get the job done. So enough about Edwin Diaz. I can't stand Diaz. He's the opposite of a closer. You want a closer to be tough. Diaz is a bully. Yeah, he'll look great through 7, 8, 9. Go after Bryce Harper. It's the playoffs, bro. Go after him. Get the job done. Manager called on him, nothing he could do. And he didn't get the job done. Frustrating, BT, to blow two leads late in that game because they had their foot on the throat of the Phillies. All right, let's get some calls here. Chris is calling from the Bronx. What's up, Chris?
Hey, Chris.
Hey, morning, guys. Thanks for getting me on. Pretty right on with both you guys' take. I love what you guys do. I love your takes. But I think you're just a little too hard on the Yankees this morning. Just in my opinion, if you watch, you watch the Yankee season, if you expected them to go into Kansas City and put up 4 runs in the first 3 innings, then I believe we've been watching a different Yankee team. As much as we want them to run into these playoffs and just take care of everybody,
mm-hmm,
it's just not the case with this Yankee team. We're going to have to watch 27 outs and just see, you know, because they're a better team on paper, that they're going to win. I also take that Saturday they won without Judge, Stanton, or Volpe hitting. That's a good look for us because once those guys get going, and hopefully tonight Judge gets going,
yeah,
We should be great.
Yeah,
you know,
no,
I mean?
Listen,
and,
Chris, they have to win the series. And they will, and thanks for the call. I'm fine with the – I'm happy with the win. I'm just pointing out the good stuff, whether it was Austin or Verdugo, yeah, or the bullpen, all the things we ran down. I think it's probably a little foolish to ignore the bad because some of the elements that were bad the other night have played the Yankees now for a couple of years, whether it's Aaron Judge. And listen, Gerrit Cole had the one bad game against the Red Sox back in the day. He hasn't quite been the ace since his return off the injury this year. He had 9 days rest, and I did see a lot of pitches up in the zone that, you know, generally have more snap. He did look rusty, but they tattooed him. There's no other way around it. So Yeah, I'm not ranting and raving about the win, but the Yankees, if they want to get to a World Series, are going to have to play better.
It's fair. It's fair for our last call, Chris, to say that what were we expecting? Now, you're right. I was maybe wrong for expecting the Yanks to have a dominant performance in Game 1 against the Royals. I don't believe the Royals are very good, and I believe the Yankees are better. And you could say, fair, I shouldn't have expected Judge or anybody else to go nuts offensively and the Yankees to put up 4 runs in the first few innings. But what nobody could expect was the performance that Gerrit Cole gave you. That should, like, it's not the Red Sox, it's not the Rays, it's not the Astros, this is the Royals. Gerrit Cole's not going to dominate the Royals in the ALDS Game 1. Then what are we doing here?
He did not look very good.
So maybe I was wrong to expect more from the Yankees overall, but I don't know how you could have expected that type of performance from Gerrit Cole. And those, to me, are bad signs moving forward for this Yankee team.
The Cole start worries. Worries is a bit strong. I'm not quite worried. Piquing my interest here. Now I really need to see what he does with the next start. I'm not totally alarmed, but the thing that bothers me again, all right, we can sit here and say, well, the Yankees scored some runs. Well, they also left a ton of guys on base because Kansas City was walking the ballpark and the Yankees didn't do much with it. So situational hitting has to get better.
So it took us an hour and a half, but we got everything in, whether it's the Jets. And in case you missed anything, check it out on the free Odyssey app. We started the show talking about the Jets, Aaron Rodgers, and that mess yesterday. We talked about the Giants and their incredible win. Well-coached, executed game plan. Dable, Daniel Jones, terrific. Yankees and their Game 1 win on Saturday night. Some good, some bad. Encouraged, discouraged. How do you feel? And then the Mets coming away with a split in the first two games in Philadelphia. Now we want to hear from you. 888-808-1019. Nick is in Wharton. What's up, Nick?
Yo, what's going on, boys? How we doing?
How are you, Nick?
What up, Nick?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Yo, so listen, my first time in the Mets, I'm actually really stoked. I'm happy. I'm proud of this Mets team this year.
But so far, I'm happy. We got to play this year. Got them on their feet. You know, they're worried that we're actually going to get far. And honestly, between you two, I think that we are the better team statistically. And offensively, we're hitting the ball. We're making runs. We're playing well defensively. We got to tighten up the pitching a little bit. But all in all, so far, man, I think they're playing really well.
Yeah, I think, thank you for the call, Nick. How can you not feel confident if you're a Met fan? So much so that in Game 1, BT, I expected them to come back. You could see the game playing the way that it did. Like, Zach Wheeler eventually was going to come out of the game. And the fact that the Mets' bullpen kept it close all game long, I expected them to come back. And it stayed true to form. They made it such an easy. Like, I didn't even really sweat in Game 1. Yesterday, a different story. I legit had a headache watching that game. The stress back, trying to hold on to a 3-0 lead, knowing what that would mean if they could get out of there and shut that crowd up with a Game 2 victory coming back home. So that was frustrating. But even in the loss, they still come back and tie the game. I have the most confidence that I've had in a Mets team in years, maybe even more so than 2015, honestly.
It's interesting. I can see why you feel that way. Now, going back to Saturday, I wasn't surprised that they came back. Why would you? That's what they've been doing for a while now. I was stunned the way they did it. We were talking before the show here. I mean,
I mean,
just after Alvarez's single, you're looking at in succession, Lindor down 0-2. Great walk, by the way. Vientos down 0-2. He looks amazing. Base hit. Nimble down 0-2. Base hit. Alonso down 0-2. Grinds out the sack fly. Iglesias down 0-2. 7 foul balls. Gets a base hit. I don't know. There's people who do this for a living, like these hidden stats, whatever. First time since 1839, a team. Whatever. I don't know that this is to happen or not, but I can't remember the last time a playoff team had 5 straight, even though Alonso wasn't a hit. 5 at-bats like that with an 0-2 count in that high-leverage situation down a bunch of runs. I've never seen that.
It was impressive. And one more note from yesterday with Vientos. Vientos has a little bit of that Piazza in him in that, well, not only is he extremely clutch, but Piazza, you could tell, and a game I always reference is the Game 6 NLCS 1999 where Brian Jordan slid into home, took Piazza out, and Piazza got up and looked like he wanted to kill somebody. And then he came up the next inning with a chance to tie it, and he did just that. And I've since talked to Mike about that, and he admitted, and I think it was even in his book, whatever. But Vientos yesterday on the misplay where he tried to, at third base to transfer.
Yeah, a little five, a little dribbler. You talking about the ground ball? Or?
To home when he was trying to come home.
Yeah, sure.
The play where he was trying to come home and cut down that runner. It was 5-4 at the time.
Uh-huh.
He was trying to cut down that runner, and he messed the play up. He tried to transfer it too quick, maybe took his eye off the ball. And you could see, or at least I don't know if you could see it in him, but I was like, you could tell that he was ticked off at himself and embarrassed by it. And then when he got a chance with the bat in his hand, you just felt like if there was anything he could do about it to make up for it, he was going to do it. Also, he did it the other night against Milwaukee.
Yeah, he did.
Where he butchered that play at third base to start, and then he comes up and he makes up for it. He's got that in him where, all right, yeah, I screwed up defensively. I'm going to do it with the stick. And he did just that. I don't know how you can't have the most confidence in the Mets right now, even after that loss yesterday. Scott is in Manhattan. What's up, Scott?
Hey, what's up, guys? Listen, I'm really glowing because being a Mets fan and Giants fan, and this weekend it was so electric in the city tonight. It was just great to see, with the baseball and everything going on. But getting on the Giants, like I said all year, I'm hopeful, as you guys said, there's growth and progression. Defense looked good. Burns, Lawrence stepped up. Daniel didn't do nothing stupid. Offensive, getting it third downs, whatever. So, as long as we keep going in the right direction, I'm good. Like I said, no high expectancies, but like I said, just staying the course, moving right, coaching's going well, and I'm good with that.
And listen, Scotty, let me throw this at you. You should be good with it. And, the pass rush, the Burns acquisition, and Kayvon getting in there yesterday, Dexter Lawrence, 3 sacks, phenomenal. Giants did a lot right, tightened up the offensive line. And I don't want to be a buzzkill. The only thing that does change, if I'm a Giants fan, my level, not of hope for the season, that's a good thing. But when I start to think bigger picture, I'm like, okay, even if they do, quote unquote, overachieve this year, aren't we right back to it next year with Daniel Jones? That's the treadmill part of the season.
Okay, it's exactly what I was going to say, so I'm glad that you brought that up. I mean, there were Giant fans. We talked about it with Marash or whoever else was following him. After week one, they wanted the Giants to tank. And now, all of a sudden, after 5 weeks, it's, hey, maybe the Giants have a chance to compete to a certain level. The quarterback, and that's why I thought this year, BT, was about the results of the season. The win-loss record, whether it's on the general manager or the head coach, because we kind of know what Daniel Jones is. Yeah, he was great yesterday. Well, we've seen that before. Is he going to be that consistently? And is he going to be good enough to where they have to open things up? Is he going to be able to take them to another level? I don't believe that he is, even with a weapon like Malik Nabers, even with a well-coached team, a deeper team, a better offensive line. He could win you games. He did it a couple years ago. But, yeah, let's say they finish with 8 or 9 wins, best case scenario, right?
Yeah.
Is that fair to say best case would be 9 wins right now?
Ten seems a bit ambitious. Okay. 8 or 9. Say 9. Okay. Over 500.
Right. I'm not saying they're going to. I'm saying that's best case scenario. Then what? You're going to be in a spot where, okay, you firmly believe that Shane could build a roster, at least the early signs are there.
Mm.
You believe in Brian Daboll for sure.
Yep.
You believe in a lot of the pieces that they have in the trenches specifically. But ultimately, you got to get to a point where you could legitimately compete. Like, they did lose to the Cowboys still. I don't care that it wasn't a blowout. They did lose to a down Cowboys team. Are they going to be able to beat the Eagles? I mean, we'll find out.
The Eagles are down as well.
Washington, they lost to Washington,
mm-hmm.
who all of a sudden has their quarterback, and they're playing at another level.
Yes.
So where do they go from here?
It's an unenviable spot to be in because you want to enjoy the wins, and I'm not saying don't, but what lurks down the road is the discussion we've had a million times. Daniel Jones.
Yeah, he's still the quarterback. Matt is in Hillsborough, New Jersey. What's up, Matt?
Hey, Matt.
Hey, good morning, boys. So I got just two things real quick. One, BT, listening to you on Saturday, I'm a Jets-Yankees fan like yourself, but the clown from Philly that called up and you had to hang up on him and smack him around. I was so happy to see the Mets win just to stick it to him.
I remember that awesome. Guy.
What
yeah.
happened?
Ooh,
I missed
it. It got ugly.
Why?
Yeah, we might have to play this call
to a somebody. Philly fan?
I mean, he started ripping on Met fans, on New Yorkers. I had to abuse him.
Good for you. I
don't know what was
going
on.
That.
Oh, okay. God. It got rough, man.
Yeah. But the second thing is, look, if they fire Sala, get someone like Mike Vrabel in here, that just holds him accountable and sets the tone, get rid of Hackett. They can find some high school kids good at Madden who can do a better job running the offense.
Mm-hmm.
Just set the tone and create a new culture in there.
Well, listen, Matt, and thanks for the call. I hear what you're saying, and I know you just say that for effect, get a high school coach. Yeah, I don't doubt that there's a lot of people around the NFL that even are available now for hire that have more innovative concepts and would be an asset to the Jets. But I do think that you understate how tough it is to actually do that during the season and implement that. It's not easy.
I just don't think there's a realistic way. Like, this is it. They made their decisions in the offseason, before the season, that they were going with Robert Saleh and Rodgers. Doesn't mean that they can't fire him, like, with 3 weeks to go if they're out of it. But as far as changing in season to save the season, this is not the NBA or NHL or Major League Baseball. It's different in football. There's no way they could blow this up to have it. I mean, unless you're telling me that they're going to do something just ridiculous, like bring in Bill Belichick, and I guess Vrabel would be in that category, but not for me. I think Belichick much more, you trust him to come in and maybe clean this thing up in a week or two, but I just don't see them. I don't think they're going to do it, nor do I see it working even if they did.
I don't know how effective it would be. Where I disagree with you is, you know, at some point I'm going to have to throw a Hail Mary to try to save this thing. And they're 2-3 now. Now, even though none of these guys would still be here if I owned the team. So I think most of us think that. But if they lose to Buffalo, it's a Monday night game. The whole world's watching. If it's ugly again, and then they lose at Pittsburgh, which also was a night game, you have to try something. Like, you can't just.
But what would be the realistic answer? Are you going to.
Even if I just fire Saleh, I elevate Ulbrich. Yeah, I mean, I just a different voice, maybe some energy. I'm not even saying it's going to work.
Yeah, well, that to me is kind of redundant. Like, that's what Ulbrich. We don't know Ulbrich is a head coach, and he's a fiery defensive coordinator, the same thing that Robert Saleh was.
Yeah.
So who's going to say that that's going to be the better answer? I mean, if you want to make significant change, but again, how do you implement an entire off? I was just going to say fire Hackett, but
I don't know. I don't know.
And with a quarterback who loves the guy in Hackett.
Well, and Tiki's told the story about where, I know we got to break here off, where, you know, back in the day where Fossil, where, remember when Fossil told the media, hey, I'm pushing all my chips in the middle?
Yeah.
And obviously the Giants team, they knew because Fossil communicated to them. He's like, listen, guys, I'm going to get fired. This is it. So we got to go. I mean, and this is very un-Woody Johnson-like, but maybe, you know, 2-3 more weeks, you just drop that edict and you take a very public persona. I know he's averse to doing that, but at some point, they're going to have to get out of the comfort zone and try something because this ain't working. 888-808, it's not even close to it. It looks awful. The record's not good, and it could get worse.
You know the thing I love most about these Mets, BT, is that they make those win probability charts. They prove that they are absolutely freaking worthless. I don't need to see another one of them. I don't understand the appeal. And then, you know, certain networks show the graphic up there. Oh, the win probability at this moment. Yeah, like, we're watching the game. You could take all those charts that probably had the Phillies win probability high in game one until it wasn't. Brewers off the charts in game three until it wasn't. Braves on last Monday. Like, that's what I love. Those stupid charts, the fan graphs, the win probability. You know what to do with them. Put them where the sun don't shine. Obliterate them. And that's what this Mets team has done. I hate that stuff.
See,
that,
I know you do. You've always complained about that. It doesn't bother me as much, although I do find them fairly useless until you get that one thing where it defies all the odds and I guess it becomes somewhat interesting. But I saw something yesterday that I do think was completely useless, pertaining loosely to what you're talking about. Not a probability to win the game, but when Lindor was up late, they actually had a percentage attached to him.
Oh, yeah.
Probability or likelihood to reach first base. Like 34%. Like what? What was that
based off of his on? I didn't understand that they were saying his on base percentage has gotten better since he's been in the leadoff spot.
Which was about 37%. Yeah. So it was.
Now I know it was a sponsored element. Of course.
So I'm thinking, I'm sure they have based on the small sample of at bats he has against the pitcher, what he's done recently. There's a few data points there. But like, I'm saying to myself, dude, he's Lindor. Even when he's not getting hits right now, he's probably going to find a way to grind out a good at-bat. So that should probably be 50%.
Yeah, bingo. That's the key with him. As you said, even the other day, down 0-2, like, he has worked incredible at-bats and not trying to be the hero either.
Yes.
Not trying to hit home run or rip one in the gap. Just work a great at-bat. Find a pitch. If it's there, crush it. If not, pass the baton.
Yeah, he's laid off some tough outside pitches where once you start, like, it's a little easier to check your swing if it's low and inside because it just based on physics. When it's outside and you start, he's actually held up on some tight ones. And, he's locked in, man.
BT and Sal on the fan. We're talking Jets, Giants, Yankees, Mets, whatever's on your mind. Chris is in Bethpage. What's up, Chris?
Hey, guys. Love the show. Hey, you know, I'm a big Giants fan, and you know who had the best day yesterday, I think, in the whole Giant organization was Joe Shane, a guy that's taken a lot of flack. You saw AC, the fifth round pick, the tight end from Penn State.
Yeah, Theo Johnson. Newbin,
the safety had a good game. I'm just saying, you know, he takes a lot of flack, and plus his offseason acquisitions to free agents. unbelievable is our right tackle from the Raiders that we
got. Yeah, Luminor. We have him every Tuesday. Jermaine Illuminor. We'll have him tomorrow on the show. What time is that, Hoff? 11:20? Supposed to be 11:10 tomorrow. We'll have Illuminor. I'm really looking forward to that. He was vocal on social media yesterday. They had a dominant performance. Finally, we get to talk to him after a big win for the Giants, so we're looking forward to that.
Yep, and tell him I'm his number one fan. And I'm going to say this, guys. I know you're big Jet fans, and I go back and forth with a lot of my Jet fan friends. All I hear is, Jets have the talent. They're built to win. They got the talent, blah, blah, blah. You know, outside of the secondary, I think the Giants are every bit as much talented. If you want to go position by position, particularly now that we have a great wide receiver who was hurt yesterday, by the way. But up front seven, we lead the league in sacks, so we don't take a backseat there. I'm just saying it's...
That's interesting.
All right, quarterback, I get it. Aaron Rodgers is better than Daniel Jones. No doubt about it.
Right, you have the better, you have the better coach. They have the better quarterback. And thank you for the call, Chris.
All right, now they have the better running backs, too, which nobody really thought would be the case. That's what's a surprise.
But, BT, this is exactly the point. Is it the running back, or is it the way that the offensive line blocks?
Yeah, well, I think
about it. The Giants have Singletary. They do it now with Tracy.
I know. I think it's a little bit of both. I do think the one thing... I think it's easy to sit here and say, not that we've really said this, but I've heard it, well, the Jets aren't opening up any holes for Breece Hall. Well, you know, sometimes the patience is required to let the hole actually develop before you try to burst through it. And it just seems like, you know, Braylon Allen's a little bit better at that. Like, Breece is trying to pop one off to the house, which I get, but he's got to show some prudence. I mean, he's just diving into the hole when nothing's there.
I bet the Giants win total, and I didn't do a lot of preseason bets, but I didn't touch the Jets. And I know a lot of people are on the 9.5, okay, over the 9.5. Something about it. And generally, I would go Jets and Giants because I want to root for both those teams because it helps for what we do, obviously. I couldn't bring myself to do it just because I didn't believe ultimately in Robert Saleh.
Mm-hmm.
But with the Giants, I did bet the over 6.5 because of Brian Daboll. Look at the difference of the two teams. I'm not going to go as far as to say the Giants are more talented or as talented, but they are talented in the right places, and they are far, far, far better coached. Think about it. A team with Daniel Jones as their quarterback has played better through 5 games than a team with Aaron Rodgers as their quarterback. How does that happen? Watch the games play out. Coaching in the NFL, BT, is such a huge thing. To me, it's the number one reason why the Giants have had success. Brian Daboll.
Jets are never ready to play. I mean, that's the most maddening aspect of this. Like, I've rhetorically asked several times, like, obviously just messing around. Like, I mean, do the Jets even practice before games? Of course they do, but it doesn't look like they do. They come out, there's no plan, there's no purpose, there's no pace, there's no execution, guys dropping balls, penalties. They're just a mess. And the Giants, in a lot of ways, are the opposite.
And think about this for the Giants. They're 2 wins. It's not like, well, everything had to be perfect for them. No. The games couldn't start any worse.
Yeah, that's true.
The Cleveland game couldn't start any worse. The opening kickoff, then the touchdown, boom.
Yeah.
They win that game. Yesterday, go all the way down the length of the field, fumble the football on the goal line, return to the house.
Mm-hmm.
They still win that game.
Yeah, and unless I'm missing something, but to me, what really turned that Browns game is when they went for it on 4th down, neighbors on the run. Which was, number one, you got to have the Stones go for it, which was a fairly easy call, but the creativity behind the play call, whereas the Jets go for it on 4th and 2, and they got the running back 7 yards behind the quarterback. I mean, it's just idiotic.
Agreed. Perfect example, BC. Dennis is in Queens. What's up, Dennis?
Hey. I'm happy to get on with you guys. I got a couple points on the Jets and Giants. One thing about the Jets, obviously, you know, the offense is stagnant. Rodgers hasn't looked good. I got a running joke that every time he gets sacked, he loses 10 years. Obviously, it's a problem. But if Quincy picks up that fumble, scores that touchdown, we don't get that pick six. We end up being in a lot better spot. I can't believe he missed Garrett Wilson for the game-winning touchdown. Down the sideline. So that obviously is a problem. But if Greg Zuerlein can hit that 50-yarder, if we could make a couple plays, Sauce Gardner.
Right, Dennis, let me ask you this, right, Dennis. Hold on, Dennis. Got a question for you. And I appreciate you pushing back a little bit. You see it a little differently. I respect that. Though I don't agree. Just answer me yes or no. Were they ready to play against the Niners, yes or no?
No, absolutely.
Were they ready to play against the Tennessee Titans, yes or no? The answer is no. They're almost down 14-0.
We played the game, but probably not playing the game.
I just want yes or no. These are easy questions, Dennis. Thanks for the call. But were they ready to play against the Broncos? The answer is no. Were they ready to play yesterday? The answer is no. They're never ready to play.
I mean, watch them. Do they look like a well-coached team?
No.
The exact opposite. Oh, my God. And you could excuse losing in London to Minnesota because Minnesota's good. Although the way that the game played out was they should not have lost that game.
That's the part that bothers you.
But the week before is what makes it unacceptable.
Yeah.
Because there's no justification. I don't care how many games Denver wins this year.
Yeah.
There's no justification for that performance against that team in your building a couple of weeks
ago. So let me get this straight. Sal's right. And you got to look at the carryover because this is directly reflective of coaching. The way the Denver Broncos game, not even just the way it ended, the way the whole game went, and then you would think that a locked-in, buttoned-up franchise would, I don't know, have some urgency and focus and crisp practices before you go to London. And what happened? Look at the way they started the London game. This is the trend. This is not us being harsh on Salah. He stinks. Woody knows it. We all know it. Woody's too soft to do anything about it. And until Salah's gone, the Jets will do nothing unless they win in spite of their awful coach.
And you know what the shame of it is? Both you and I, Hoff as well, we got sucked into thinking that exactly what you just said, all for that loss, maybe that'll be a wake-up call.
Yeah.
All right, it's an aberration of a disgusting performance at home. Yeah, exactly. All right, they'll get it together. Rodgers will be better. They'll bounce back. And no, it was even worse. Three interceptions from Rodgers. The defense can't make a big play to save their life. They were okay, but they're going to make a big play. Can't run the football. Coaching is awful. We gave them the benefit of the doubt.
That's expired. No more. Now you got to show us. I mean, they've had Aaron Rodgers throw. Pardon me, Sal. They've had. I said this in the first hour, but it's basic, but it bears repeating. They've thrown the football over 100 times back-to-back games in the rain with a banged-up 40-year-old quarterback. That is the height of stupidity and negligence. Hackett is an idiot. I'm sorry, man. Stinks.
Woo! BT's on fire today. I like this. All right, BT and Sal on the Fan. More your calls when we come back. Remember, we'll reset hit you at the crown topic. But really, it's going to be Jets, Giants, Yankees, and Mets. All of it on the board. 888-808-1019.